Right, can you just say your name and spell it, please?
Matt Hale, MATTHALE.
And what's your date of birth?
8/8/58.
And whereabouts did you live in the Leytonstone area?
241 Grove Green Road.
And was that the first place you looked at?
I don't remember. I think it might have been. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was. Yes, I think it was.
Can you remember anything about the when you applied to Acme and so forth?
I did it because I was living in South London in squats, and I was in a house that. And then I moved to a £1 a week house with London Quadrant Housing for a studio, which I shared with Mark Wallinger. And then that summer I left Goldsmiths, where I'm doing an MA, and I finished in, that was in 86. And I didn't really want to stay on my own in this place, and I wanted somewhere a bit more permanent, and that wasn't very permanent, that house. I think I was going to have to move out of it, and it didn't have a bathroom or anything. And so I applied to Acme. This is my memory of it all. I'd had space studios before, and then I'd heard that they got these houses. I think I knew Pete Owen had one, who was another guy, an artist from Chelsea School of Art I'd known before for years, and he had one. And I think that's probably where I got the idea of going up there from. And then I applied, and I don't think it was any problem. I don't remember going there or not to do an interview or anything, but probably met Roger Kite up in Leytonstone and went and looked around it, and it was equally as good as what I had, probably better, and reasonably cheap as they were. But more than I was paying, obviously, but I wouldn't, you know, I wasn't bothered by that.
And what was your first impression when you went to look at the place?
I mean, they were just, having lived in squats, they were very similar, really. They were houses which didn't have great facilities, but they had slightly better, and I think there was a shower, electric shower, and an unsmashed toilet, which was a new thing, because we usually had to fix our own. And there was, you know, effectively, so there was a bathroom, which I didn't have at the time, they were just, you know, shells of houses, really, but they were in pretty good nick, as far as I was concerned. I mean, obviously nothing like what the private sector would be, but then for a studio house, that's what you want. You don't want a neat house. You want one with floorboards and something you don't have to be too precious about.
So, did you get a flat or a house?
House. Yeah. No, because the idea was you were allowed a whole house to yourself, because an artist would need studio space and living space. So you had, either I used downstairs, living room, dining room, what was, as the studio, and then lived upstairs in a bedroom, bathroom, and sort of front room was the front bedroom, as it had been. I think there was a big hole in the wall through to the next door house, because someone had been and smashed that down to get the fireplaces out. They'd come in the front door, nick one fireplace, smash through the wall into the next house, and nick that one, and then carry it back through the hole in the wall, then out, so they could be less seen. So I had to fill that hole in with bricks and stuff. I mean, there was a bit of work to do, but that was the agreement with that man. I was quite happy. It wouldn't cost any money. It was just time, and I wasn't short of time. So.
And can you remember kind of how much work you did to the house? Because you've mentioned, like, you kind of set it up so you lived upstairs and walked downstairs for the
work. Well, Acme did the shower, so that was, didn't have to do that, and the sink and stuff upstairs. I didn't have to do any plumbing, that I remember. I think they did that. So really, it wasn't, and the wiring was done by them. And there were sockets and things anyway, so I didn't need to do any of that. I think I just did things like whitewashing walls to get, which is what you want in a studio usually, and just, you know, made it a bit more homely, probably. Just varnished, I think I varnished the floor upstairs, the wooden board, so it was slightly more livable. Just put my furniture in it, that what little I had, and then got a few bits together gradually, but I didn't do that much, really. I didn't have to do anything to the roof or anything. It was all, I mean, there were, I think, you know, you got what you got in a way. When I got that house, you might have got a different one. It might have been different. I don't know other people's experience. I can't remember what Pete's was like when he got his. I don't know how much he did. But I wasn't, I think when you, as, as they got filled, you got the worst one. You know, the best ones got taken, and I was not early. I wasn't an early taker. I don't know how long people had been there for before me, but, you know, probably, well, I really don't know, actually.
What year did you move in?
86, yeah.
Did you get a garden as well?
Yeah, there was a garden. Yeah, it was quite nice, really. I mean, it wasn't well kept, but it was a nice size, and it had apple trees in the bottom of it, I think. And there was an artist next door, and his garden was in quite nice nick. Jeff Dennis lived next door, and he had a nice garden. Very friendly neighbour. He and Joss Samuel, I think her second name was. Yeah, who I still see sometimes. I think Jeff teaches at Oxford or Ruskin or something, maybe. Live in Tottenham, I think.
Mm. And, like, did you sort of quite quickly get to know the artists?
Well, yes, I did, because I knew Pete Owen already, and he was a good friend who I'd known for years, because we went to Chelsea together and left in 81, and he went to MA, so I had him, and we basically, in those days, we used to go down to the local pub, which was called the Northcote, I think, was the one we went to mostly. We did go to one called the Heathcote, which was, we lived in between the two, but the thing was, a lot of other artists who lived there did as well, so, and Pete knew some of them, so it was like going in the pub was where everyone went in the evenings, and then you'd be sitting with lots of other artists. I remember particularly Sharon Hall and Dave Ryan were people who I sat with Pete quite a lot, but there was quite a number of us.
And did you know, Sharon and Dave before?
No, I didn't know Sharon and Dave before. No, I did meet them up there, definitely. No, I made quite a few new friends with artists up there. I don't think, I'm almost certain I hadn't. If I had met them, it would have been through Pete at his party at his own house, but I don't think I did, actually.
And did Pete get his house before you?
Yeah, as far as I remember. Definitely. I mean, I think that's why I went up there, because A, there was somebody up there who I knew, that would be made it a bit easier decision, but also that's how I probably knew about the possibility.
And can you, remember sort of local people around? Did you sort of...
Well, over the years, obviously, I did get to know quite a few, but not to begin with much that I remember. I mean, we didn't meet many local people in the pub that I remember particularly, because there were so many artists, you just didn't have a need, as it were. You weren't sitting in there on your own meeting. But I probably did talk to some, but I don't remember them. Neighbours-wise, as I say, I had an artist as a neighbour. On one side, the other house was empty for a while, and then some artists squatted it eventually.
So can you remember who they were?
They were from Israel, I think. I damn don't remember their names. I can't remember their names now. They came, it might have been quite late on that they came. They weren't there a very long time. I'm really sorry, I can't remember their names.
Can you remember their work or anything? Did you?
It was quite varied and made of all different kinds of things, and was quite. I think there was some photography, but I don't remember. We got on fine, but they weren't easy to get on with. I think there was possibly a language problem, and also, because I think they hadn't been in the country long. I think they were probably escaping some god-awful thing. And they made work, but I don't think I saw much of it. No, not really is the answer.
Mm.
I remember Sharon and Dave's well. We used to go around there quite a lot after the pub and talk about painting and all kinds of stuff like that. And
what was Sharon's and Dave's house like? Because I remember it looked like it had a lot of ivy.
It was a big house. I think it was on the end of a row, one of the ones that you lived in, actually, wasn't it?
Mm.
See, it was a much bigger house than Pete and I's, and it was covered in ivy, but the rooms were larger. But they hadn't, it wasn't all done up at all, particularly flashily. It was nice, but it was, you know, probably quite original, and studio spaces were in it and stuff. We used to go and sit in sofas, I think, and stuff. It was all right. Yeah, but it did look, it was completely covered in ivy, as far as I remember. And they were abstract painters, which was quite interesting, because I wasn't really, but so we used to talk about that quite a lot, why they were doing that, and why weren't they doing stuff that I could understand. I obviously knew you, living up the road a bit, from the pub, Alison Marchant, that is.
to your house, if you compare your house, you say Dave and Sharon's in Belleville Road, like how many rooms did you have in your house?
Well, there was downstairs, effectively there was one, because the living room and the dining room, which weren't big, were knocked, that had a wall knocked down in between when I got in there, so that was one room really, which was about the same size, probably lengthwise, as Dave and Sharon might have had in one of their rooms, but they had two of them as far as I remember. I just remember the house being a lot bigger. There were houses in Philibert Road that were much bigger as well. Mm. But then, you know, say, I mean, there was John Petternoot, so he had, where he lived, it was a much bigger house in Philibert Road. It was enormous. And the, but more people were in it, so... Mm. They had more rooms.
So how many, like, bedrooms would you have?
I had one. If I used the downstairs as a studio, the two bedrooms that were upstairs were not, because one was a bedroom and one was a, had to be a some sort of living room, really. Otherwise, well, I say had to be, that's what I did with it. The effect of it was a two-bedroom house. Or it had been a three-bedroom, but they'd made the back bedroom into a bathroom. Which is possible, actually. I'm not sure. It had these funny folding doors, actually, that the whole wall opened up. It wasn't like a door into the bathroom. We went up the stairs, and then these flap doors opened into this room. It was really nice, actually. I don't know why it was like that. I've forgotten that, don't I?
Did you have an outside toilet as well?
Yeah, there was. It didn't work though. There had been, I think. There was. It was just like a little storeroom, really. Yeah.
Did you use your garden for anything?
Well, I got it better and used it. Yeah, I did used to socialise it. And at one point, I had a girlfriend, Lucy Bagley, living there with me for a while, and she made it even better. It had flowers in it and stuff. And we was, you know, socialising, barbecue. I remember having a barbecue in it. Yeah, we didn't grow any vegetables in it though. It was a bit overgrown at the back end, but it was quite nice. It was quite. I quite liked it being fairly natural really at the other end. But yeah, I used it.
And when you lived with Lucy, was Lucy an artist?
She was an actress, or actor. I'm not sure what you're supposed to say. But, no, she'd been living with a guy called Ian Bourne down the road. Claremont Road, I think, I'm not sure. He was a filmmaker, and I don't know, I must have met them in the pub, I was friends with them all. And, they weren't going out with each other, I was told, and so we got off with each other, and then she moved in with me. And then she moved out again eventually.
So how long did you live with Lucy then?
I don't know, actually. I'm really not sure. My memory is terrible about these things like that. It must have been a couple of years or something, but I really actually don't know. I don't know. I moved out of the house in around 94. And up the road into a flat of my next girlfriend when the houses got knocked down. But she moved out before that, but I don't know how long for. Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
And so when you got there in 86,
yeah,
was our East Gallery going then?
Well, I'd been to Art East Gallery when I didn't live there, as far as I remember. So I think it was before, but I can't be 100% sure about this. I think if I'd lived there and it had been going as a group thing, you know, like run by Sharon and or whoever, these people who were doing it, I think I might have got involved in it, and I never did. But I'm really not 100% sure, but I know that I'm pretty sure Pete was in a show in it, and I think I would have gone to that. But it's a bit of a hazy memory.
I think
I did come up from the South London to it, but I may only have been once. I know where it was. It was a sort of old furniture shop by the railway bridge that goes over Leighton Stone High Road.
Can you remember what you thought about it?
I don't think I knew much about it, really. I mean, I didn't have any strong opinions about it. It was quite a good space, and I think it was a group show I saw, and I thought it was fine. I don't think I knew what really. I think my impression was it was sort of what I would have called a sort of cooperative-y type venture, but I really didn't know a lot about it. What I do know about it is probably been told to me about it, or I've read it somewhere or something, you know, or heard from people who were involved, but I don't really have a lot of knowledge about it, really. I don't think it existed when I lived there.
Hmm. So, like, when you was doing your own artwork and everything around, say, from the early time that you was there, how did you manage to support yourself?
Well, I'd been a play leader on the Adventure Playground in Camden when I lived in South London, and I'd gone up and down on my moped, and I did 4 days a week in total, a 4 8-hour, but I did 24 hours a week, spread over about 4 days on the Adventure Playground. So that's how I paid my way just before I got there. But just before I got up there, I got punched in the face by one of the big lads, and I had to decide I'd had enough of this. I'm, you know, working my ass off, and they're just horrible. But Goldsmiths, one of the students was Claire Joy, and she worked at Artscribe magazine doing the picture research and getting all the pictures together for the mag, handling all the slides and everything like that. And they needed somebody to work at the magazine selling ads. And I was just desperate to get out of the job I had by then, she said, would you like to do it? And I started that that summer, I think. So when I went to Acme, that's what I was doing. I was working for Artscribe. So I would have, and I worked there about 3 or 4 days a week. It was quite a lot of work, really. That's how I remember. And I worked there for quite a while. I think I worked there till 91. I'd have to check up on that if that's important. But.
And then, in 91, did you then get the job with Art Monthly?
Yeah, Artscribe was got changed publishers, and I didn't like the new publishers, and didn't like the way they were. You know, it just wasn't really working the same way. You weren't in the same office as the editors, and you were just supposed to be. They didn't have any idea about how Art magazines worked, really. And I think Michael Archer was. Who'd been at Art Monthly was at Artscribe, and he was leaving Artscribe as well because he was fed up. And I think I just approached Art Monthly or Liam Gillick, who worked for Art Monthly, then helped me get the job or introduced me to Nell Wendler, who ran Art Monthly with Jack Wendler, and I just went and saw them. And they needed somebody anyway, so they were only too pleased to have someone who'd already got a bit of experience doing what they needed someone to do. And it was a nice atmosphere in the office there. Like, it was a bit like. Was more friendly than the Artscribe one I'd ever been, actually. So that's what I did. Yeah, so then I was still at Acme. Yeah.
So, can you sort of say something a bit about, like, what the area was like?
I mean, when we got there, the area was. The general impression was. It was a typical sort of London suburb. I'd been brought up in a London suburb anyway, in Enfield, in North London, and this was a similar one. It was, you know, a mixture of people of different ages and classes and all kinds of stuff. It was predominantly British white that I remember seeing around. Not entirely, but say, for instance, now it's completely different. The report feels quite different anyway. I don't mean to make a comment about that, really. I'm just saying that's... And there were a lot of old white people living there who'd been there for years and been there all their lives, who you'd see going in the shops, or, you know, you'd meet sort of as neighbours trotting along the road kind of thing. And so that was the general impression. It was, you know, it was just a typical suburb. And I mean, obviously all that did change over the years, and being still up there a bit now, you know, you notice a big change. But
so when you was on Grove Green Road, what was your nearest station?
Well, I was bang between Leighton and Leightonstone. It's virtually halfway between the two.
So which station did you get out at mostly?
Varied. If I was going to the Northcote pub, I'd get out at Leighton. If I was going to the Heathcote, I'd get out at Leightonstone. That's right.
So, like,
if I was going to Pete's, I'd get out at Leightonstone. I don't know, whatever. If I was going to the co-op, I'd get out at Leightonstone.
And when you went to work, did you
think I'd wait
bury your train station.
No, I think I'd wait at Leytonstone usually. I don't know why. Get a seat easier. I think came there first, didn't it? A lot didn't get on from there before getting on at Leytonstone. At Leyton. That's my memory.
Did you used to see artists around, you know, when you was, like, walking?
Yeah. I mean, I remember one memory I've got is my current partner, Deborah Thomas. I remember seeing her cycling down the road and thinking how pretty she was. That was I quite often saw artists in that way, you know. And you meet them in the street and have conversations with them. Yeah, quite a lot, actually, probably. Yeah, and you go shopping up the Leytonstone and go in the library and whatever and see people. It was quite... it was definitely quite a pleasant set in that sense. You would, you know, you felt you were part of a community, really, because there was quite a lot of people around you would bump into, you know, after a few years, obviously.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was good that way.
So what about some of your girlfriends, Matthew? Because most of them were artists. I'm just thinking, like, Anne Monaghan as well.
She wasn't a girlfriend. She was just a friend.
Oh. Can you say a bit about, like, her house? Can you
remember? It was she had a big house to herself, as I remember. I used to go in there for cups of tea. It was enormous. It was very, very Victorian. A lot of the houses were quite Victorian in a funny way. They were quite dark. A lot of people seemed to have... I don't think my house was like that, really, but a lot of people's houses had thick carpets and patterns and pianos and wooden furniture and a lot of second-hand stuff, but it was all very dark and Victorian-y. I think Sharon Day's houses were like that.
Yeah.
That's my memory of it. I wasn't brought up with houses like that at all, so I intended to just not do that. I was a white wall, varnished floorboard man, because that's what my mum and dad did years ago anyway. So I remember that quite a lot. Pete's house was pretty sparse, usually with dust swept into a corner very neatly. But white walls and, you know, no carpet hardly, I don't think. I didn't have any carpets at all, I don't think. I did eventually when Lucy came. She made our front room upstairs a bit like one of these rooms, actually, thinking about it. Anne Moynihan's house was crammed with paintings all down the hall, stacked, you know, squeezing. I remember having to squeeze. Most people's halls were full of paintings you had to squeeze through. And, you know, stuff in the way and not treated like a normal house, really. You know, they'd saw wood in the hall or not be too precious about anything. Lots of dust everywhere. But lots of stuff, though.
It's interesting what you say about the kind of darkness and the Victorian aspect of those houses.
They were probably saving electricity.
Because John Smith's house was really like that. In fact, it used to give me the spooks when I went past it, because it just had that huge hedge.
I'm trying to remember which house his was.
In Colville Road. And you just thought, no light must get into that window. And
well, Ian Bourne, who lives next door, a few doors down from me now, still in a house that I think he ended up buying. I can't remember what happened now, but he doesn't have any light getting in his front room now, because I think he uses it for editing. So because they're filmmakers, I think they tend to like a dark room in order to watch the film. You know what I mean? And they're very much watching screens and things, so they tend. I mean, that's probably what a lot of kids do with games now, but, I mean, they set up their houses, probably... And if they're filming indoors, they probably would only want one type of light, so they probably set up artificial light, wouldn't they? I actually don't think I ever went in John Smith's house. I've been in Ian's houses, but I don't think I ever went in John Smith's.
So can you remember, like, you've mentioned Geoffrey Dennis?
Yeah, he was my neighbour at 241. He and Roz both painted there.
And can you remember anyone else down Grave Green Road?
Well, there was, quite a few people. Hang on. There's a lovely Irish man with a red beard. I've forgotten his name. There was a guy who lived a couple of doors down from Pete, who was a painter, the Irish guy, who actually painted Caro's sculptures for him. I've gone blank on his name. I see him now, occasionally, but he's a Sufi now. He used to drink Guinness.
Gary Doherty.
He lived a few doors down from Pete, so I remember him. He used to make big paintings upstairs in his house. I mean, really, he used to make epic... I don't know, he never couldn't get them out of the house. He just used to make these huge lumpen, fat, three-dimensional paint stuff things. So I remember him. I mean, there was Tony Potts, who was another filmmaker, who was a really nice guy. He lived up Dyers Hall Road as well, further along from Pete, under the railway bridge. But I'd known him from Chelsea School of Art years ago because he was on the film course there with Anne Rees-Mogg when I was at Chelsea. And I think Pete knew him from there as well. Very friendly man. Still see him as well sometimes. Who else do I remember? I mean, obviously up in Philibert Road, I mean, I got to know Paul Noble and Sally Barker and John Petanuzzo and Connie Parker, and I don't think I knew anyone else who lived in a house that I remember. There were a number of people I never did get to know. Mm. Probably just people who didn't drink in the pubs much and who lived up Philibert Road were less known, which was Connie and co, really. They had enormous houses and they were like communities in their own right, just a couple of houses. But Paul and that lived up there, and so I got to know some of them through that. I remember going to parties up there. There was someone called Christine who lived on the corner by Leytonstone Station who wasn't an artist. That's about the only one person I can remember who wasn't an artist, actually. I think she was a psychiatric nurse or something. She still lives around there. And Howard, obviously, I remember Howard, who lived with you, down Colville. And there was a bloke on the... I mean, there were a lot more people I got to know when the road protest started, who I'm not mentioning at the moment. Mm. But whether I remember their names is another matter. But that meant I met a lot more people who were not artists then.
Do you think, you talked about, in almost little communities in themselves... Was that kind of to do with the geography of where the streets were, like Philibert Road being closer to Leytonstone?
Yeah. It can't have been only to do with geography, because, I mean, you're talking about a very small area, really, aren't you? Mm. So it can't... It's a very linear development in that sense. Most people who were artists lived on this line that was the road, was Grove Green Road and Philibert Road, because that was where the houses were going to be possibly knocked down to build the new motorway. So they were all on that line. But that which meant they were, you know, far apart in that sense, but they weren't really far apart. I don't know. I just knew I didn't get to know everybody. But I must have known quite a few of the people, though, really. Or certainly met a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I remember two people I haven't mentioned, but I won't remember their names probably. There was another couple of guys, I think were partners. One was a filmmaker. One was called John. I can't remember the other guy's name, but one was very camp, and they were great fun. I can't remember their names, but they lived just down the road from me, on the bend of Grobing Road by Dyer's Hall. I don't remember those. They don't live in the area at all now. Left London, I think. But the community thing.
Painters?
No, I don't think so. They were definitely artists, though. And I think they were from somewhere in...
John
Goldboard? No, I don't think so. I could ask Deb, actually, she'd know. They were friends of Deb. But I can't remember, no. Goldboard? I don't think so. Sorry, I can't remember. I knew I wouldn't remember everyone's names. I can probably tell you later if you want to know, if it helps you with your transcript thing. They were bonkers, actually, but they were really nice. They used to have huge rails and stuff and walk in the pub with a black eye, one of them would, or something like that. Or they'd come in and one would come in a huff and say, and the other one would come in later on and say something. They were quite fun, though. Sure, there's probably a lot of people I'm forgetting, actually, but I can't... I mean, there's people there now, I know, who are artists, who were not there then, which is funny. Someone like Patrick Brill now lives in Leytonstone, and he never lived there then at all, which is weird, because I was thinking, what's he doing there now? It's like he's... And he even set up a gallery in his garden, which was quite amusing for a while, because having had, you know, various things and lots of artists there, for this guy to move in, and they've all gone, and then he starts a gallery in his garden. It was rather a bit ironic, really.
So did... Did you get involved in any of the open studios down there?
Yeah, I did. I think I did one or two. The ones connected with the Whitechapel Open. Yeah, I did.
Was it Leighton Artist Group?
I think it probably was, which I don't think I was really a member. I don't remember being a member of that, really. I just think it probably wasn't... I don't know how rigid it was anyway, but somebody did. Someone organised something, because we got... our names on a sort of leaflet thing with a funny drawn map, didn't we, and numbers and stuff. I just remember saying yes, I think. I don't think I did anything else. I can't remember doing anything else. I did have all that stuff, but at one dreadful moment I threw a lot of stuff away, so I wish I hadn't. But Yeah, and I did do Home Studio, which I think went quite well. I remember people traipsing in and out of the house. I mean, it was kind of pointless in a way, but you lived in hope that somebody might take heart and buy something or give you an exhibition.
So, like, when you did that Open Studio, can you remember what work you had in it?
Yeah, I think I was doing big paintings at the time, which were all based on covers of Artscribe, but they were all dots. They were like real close-up little areas taken off Artscribe and blown up. So they were like basically impressionist dot kind of things, really, but they were just taken from the printing process from kind of four-colour magazine printing. But actually, I just used the films used to print the covers of Artscribe, so they were based on that. So they were big abstract paintings, really. And I turned into an abstract painter for a while. Really, sort of.
So did you have that all, like, in the downstairs?
Yeah, I had probably about four paintings up downstairs in the downstairs. That would have been it with those, because I couldn't have had any more up. There wouldn't have been room. I might have put some stuff upstairs. I don't know if I did, actually. I think I only did it once or twice, maximum. In the end, I think... See, what happened, I think I realised that kind of thing didn't really work very well for me. I didn't really see the... You know, like, your kind of audience was totally... It was just anybody who happened to feel like wandering in. The only thing that was nice was when other artists came in who lived in this area who didn't actually come in to your house. They weren't that good of friends, so that was quite nice. So actually, community-wise, it was quite good. Mm-hmm. But so that wasn't really what it was set up for, as far as I know.
Do you think like that most of the audience to the Open Studios were artists who lived there anyway? Or do you...
No, I think we got people coming on the tube. Yeah. But I think there were people from... No, I do think there were other people came... But definitely there was local people, the local artist community did, they probably were the majority. But I know some people came in from who traipsed out on the tube. I mean, they got quite a lot of studios in a, you know, you walk from one studio to station to the next station, back to the, you know, you could go in quite a few houses if you want. And it was quite well, it was quite easy to find everybody.
But, did you go on that studio walk yourself?
I went to some people's houses. I definitely took the opportunity to go around and see people. Yeah, I did. I don't think I did it... Because the thing is, the difficulty was you were doing it. Mm-hmm. So you had to really be in your house. So the only way you could... So then when you were supposed to be open, you couldn't really go and look. So I think I do remember actually organising somebody to come in my studio for a bit so I could go and look at some. But I wouldn't have done them all because I couldn't. But I probably went and saw people who I...
Is there any that you can remember?
Probably not really, you know. Mm-hmm. I would have probably gone round to people who I knew quite well who were, like, you know, I'd have gone to, say, be friendly to go and see Pete's one, you know. And I think people used to have parties in the evening. I think I remember going to parties, you know, because it timed quite well to say everyone come round. I mean, that's what I remember more, is what happened in the evenings afterwards, rather than... Because in the day you were just sat in your studio on your own and waited for someone to come round. That's my memory of it.
But you sound like... It was really well attended.
Fairly well attended. Yeah. I mean, given as we were way out of London, you know, and it was quite a traipse of people. But, I mean, I wouldn't have known what was good or bad, because, I mean, I wouldn't have known how to judge it, really. I wouldn't have, you know, if it had been thousands of people all pouring through, I would have been absolutely gobsmacked. But I didn't expect that, so... Mm. Yeah, it was pretty good, pretty good.
I mean, what do you think about the kind of geography of... where we were, you know, because it was much more East London than, say, the East End.
Yes. I mean, I think I realised in the end that it was too far out. Say, you know, what really to expect people to come, or say you're going, if you're going to... I mean, I think if you were to open a gallery there, it would have been, at that time, even to up to quite... Well, even now, actually.
Really?
I think it's a long way for people to come out from, you know... Especially if you've got one gallery on its own, which I mean, you know, that's why the clustering of galleries pays off for everybody, doesn't it? Because it makes it worthwhile traipsing to that area, because when you get there, there's going to be quite a lot to see. Whereas one gallery somewhere is a bigger ask, isn't it? I don't mean you shouldn't do it. I just mean it's a tougher. But it depends what the gallery is there for. I mean, if it's there for the community, then it doesn't matter. Mm. Which I think maybe the one in Leytonstone High Road was more thought of in that way. Perhaps, I don't know.
Any long-term residents coming round to your open studio, you know, who weren't artists or anything, but just...
I don't remember that happening to me, but I didn't probably make the effort to ask people if I knew any, but I don't think I did. No. I mean, I don't think the community, as in the existing community before we got there, benefited directly much in that way. But maybe some artists did do that more.
Yeah.
I wasn't probably that interested in. I think I wasn't making work that would have been very. Would have communicated easily to a lot of them. It didn't communicate very well to me, so I was struggling so much, especially in the early days.
So you've mentioned one of the open studios. Can you remember what you did for the other one?
No. It would be very similar. I can't remember at all. I don't remember. You see, the thing is, what my memory of my studio and having people in it is more to do with, like, when I left Goldsmiths, we kept going on with seminars. Some of the students in my year wanted to keep going. So we used to have studio visits, which we organised ourselves. So I remember having ex-students from Goldsmiths MA come up to my studio and have a big meal and have a studio visit and then have a meal afterwards, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I remember that happening. So that's, I was much more kind of, I think I just, you know, I was more into my own, creating my own audience in the sense where, based probably on people I knew and people I wanted to keep involved with, but didn't live in the area, and, you know, just we'd go to each other's studios wherever they were, really. And that went on for a few years, actually.
So did you get anyone come in to look at your work in your studio?
Yeah, I had people come for the British Art Show visited at one point. I remember that. I don't know why. I can't remember how it happened now. I don't remember if you had to apply or whether they rang me. I really haven't got a clue. I remember that happening. Didn't go anywhere. I didn't get in the show. But I remember them coming round. I don't remember particularly. I don't think I've ever been very good at inviting people from galleries to come up much. And I didn't do a lot of that. I mean, that's why we started running the gallery in the end, because I found that basically the studio situation wasn't good for showing my work in, because there wasn't room to do it. It wasn't a great big warehouse type space. It was a house. So I was making paintings that were fairly big. Well, I don't know why I was, but I was. And so it was hard to show them. So, you know, we ended up running a gallery instead, I think, really, because it was better to show work in.
And when did you set up City Racing then?
88 was the first show, but I think I wasn't involved then. That was Pete. I went to it, and then the next year, I think I was in the next show. They invited me to be in a group show. Pete did. So that would be 89 was when I probably got involved. When we got involved properly in 90, really, is when it really took off. I think we just did a show. I was in a group show, and then he was in a show before that, and then we did a show. We did proper a few shows in 90, I think, yeah.
So can you sort of say how that all came about?
Well, the impetus, I think, was through wanting to show people our work and be seen in a better way than you could do in an Acme House studio space, really, or in a squat, which is where Keith... And there was this space which was in a squat, a betting shop down in South London, which Keith Coventry lived in with John Burgess, or that's when I got involved, anyway, they did. And there was a space there which was Keith's studio, and he was willing to open it up and let us use it. We turned it into a more gallery like type space. I mean, we were fairly conventional, we just wanted to, you know, we polish the floors and whitewash the walls and put on shows. But
so, in a way, that was like a response to your live workspace?
Partly. Yeah, but partly. I mean, I think it was also a response to a lack of opportunities happening or knowing how to get them to happen. Because, you know, say, again, you know, if you live in Leytonstone, how are you going to get a gallery, of which there are very few anyway, a gallerist or somebody to come and see your work? It's quite hard, you know, and you could send slides off to people, but that didn't seem to work much, really. People used to send slides to galleries, and very often nothing would happen, you wouldn't hear. So we just thought, well, if you actually can run a gallery... I think that's why Pete and Keith did it originally, and that, I think that was the kind of reason why we all ended up doing it, I think. But also, I think it was... But it did change, partly. You know, it did become quite a community again, really, in a funny way. You end up with a... But you create an audience, which there was in Leytonstone in a way, for your studio, but it was limited to that geography and that area very much. And I think, you know, we knew a lot of other people and wanted to... broaden it much more than that.
So I suppose, in city racing.
Which was more central, by the way. It wasn't so far out. I mean, it wasn't central, but it wasn't as far out as Leytonstone. And also, it was there. I mean, you know, it was usable and free. And
what about your other work around that time? I mean, did you show in the Whitechapel Open?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I showed... I ended up making smaller abstract paintings, which were based, again, on the printing process. So they were like a striped panel of cyan, magenta, yellow and black on one side, and then a square, almost exactly the same, next to it, which was a broken-up image with dots and stuff like that. And I showed those in the Whitechapel. I got a pair of those in the Whitechapel Open, and then Maureen Paley gave me a show, put me in a group, a three-person show, interim art, having seen them a year later. But I was still doing them a year later. But then after that show, which didn't, not much happened really, and I didn't really get on with her terribly well. I mean, it was fine, but it wasn't very easy to get on with. I stopped doing them, actually, and I tried to get away from painting. But I was going I wasn't doing Goldsmiths. I moved on to Mars and Mars later. Life gets very complicated in your head all time. I can't remember. I ended up doing non-painting paintings using test tubes and engine oil and grease. And I don't know if it was directly obvious, but there was a connection to sort of roads and pollution and stuff in this work. But this is quite a lot later than they were sort of like, probably 90, yeah, probably actually probably quite near the end, 93 or 4, as far as I remember. And they were like landscapes with backlit with lights, and they the image was a landscape, but it was made from industrially produced liquids like engine oil and grease and bubble bath and all the things that you'd kind of buy in a supermarket that, when you then put it down the drain or burns it out of the back of your car, would actually pollute. That was the kind of vague thinking of it. But they were paintings, really. They just weren't fixed and they didn't dry. They were in. So they were kind of... looking back now, I think they were quietly influenced by the road campaign and the road being built and all that stuff. But I wasn't thinking it that very clearly at the time, I don't think, probably.
And how big were they?
Well, they weren't that big. They were sort of 4 foot long by about 10 inches high or something. They were like boxes, really, that went on the wall with glass tubes sort of in the box on the front, so solid sides and top and then.
And so they never dried, so they were.
No, and I've still got some now, and they're still the same, and they're just literally liquid in the tube. But by the viscosity of the liquid, you could, and by using a strip light in the back, you could sort of create this landscape. Top and bottom, you know, like a sky and a ground, basically, or a seascape. Well, you know, blue. I did seascapes using blue, and I did different ones which kind of changed as you went across. They were kind of pretty, but not really, because when you actually looked at them, they were, you know.
Did you title that work?
Yeah, the one was called Liquid Engineering, which was after the engine oil. I think it was an advert at the time for oil. They used to say Liquid Engineering, and there was one called Comfort, which was based on that stuff you wash your jumpers with. They were just kind of using the titles of the products, but to allude to sort of, because the way they allude to nature in some of the products, like pine forest bubble bath, you know, and it isn't pine forest at all, it just smells a bit like it. That kind of, I was kind of interested in that kind of thing. And
how many did you do of those?
Not loads, probably about 8 or something. They took quite a lot of making, really, because they were quite... I had to construct them myself a bit ham-fistedly, and, you know, I had to get hold of all the glass test tubes and buy all the bottles of stuff. I mean, I had to actually buy the product. This was the one twist of the knife, really, was that in order to make them, I had to buy the stuff that I didn't really approve of, if you see what I mean. But
And did you show that work?
Yeah, I showed that at City Racing. Yeah, I got a guy, and one of them was some of them too. There were two in Freeze magazine as well. I did a double show with Kate Smith, who had been at Goldsmiths with me on the MA at City Racing, and she'd come out to my studio in Leytonstone, and we'd talk about what we'd do, quite a lot, actually. We were trying to do a show where you didn't just show whatever you did and just put it next to you. We tried to work out a show that would be of interesting work, put and make new work.
Yeah.
And that had come out of our goals with MA, and she used to come out to, and I'd go to her studio, and we'd have long conversations, and then, you know, not tell each other what to make at all, but just know what the other one was doing, so you'd make it. And
what did Kate do then?
She made a load of work which was similarly using glass, and hers were like fish tanks with some very beautiful kind of, like, it's got a proper name, I don't know what it is, it's some sort of silk material which looks a bit watery, and that was laid in the bottom sort of wavily, and then there were fishing flies were placed in it. Her work was much more to do with class and the difference between dry flies and wet flies, and how the upper classes use dry flies only and the working class use wet flies. And but if you saw the show, formally there was a kind of connection, and it was all to do with, we were thinking about, I suppose, vaguely, you know, power and different ways in which it kind of affects people, or does. I mean, that's very vague, but it looked quite formally similar.
You know, when you did the shows at City Racing, did you do press releases, or did you just do cards?
Yeah, no, we did cards, but we would do press releases sometimes, not always though. It did vary a bit. It was very sporadic. Sporadic. But we had what we thought was a big mailing list by the time we finished, so we'd always mail out a card, and the card got to be more involved with the artist and the image, and, you know, they'd help sort of had a style of the font and everything, but if it was two-sided, it would be, but we didn't have loads of money, so they couldn't do too much. But you said press releases. I mean, there was no email then, so we probably would post stuff to magazines and people like that and try and say something, but we didn't really believe in writing loads of stuff about artists' work, you know, unless they really wanted to do it themselves, because we weren't critics, we weren't trying to judge anything, we were just giving opportunities, in the end, really, to people.
And so that show, you said that got reviewed?
Well, no, actually, it got kind of a little feature in Freeze. It was quite early days of Freeze magazine. I mean, it was probably like issue 7 or something like that. I can't remember now, but it was quite an early days. And I can't even remember who wrote. Somebody who used to write reviews in Time Out came to the show, and she wrote it for Freeze. Okay. And I can't remember her name. Rose something, I think. I've gone and forgotten her name. Again, I could not tell you that. And that was really great, getting that in. And, you know, my Liquid Engineering was very photographic, actually, because it looked like smoking. It was at the time of the Gulf War when I made the Liquid Engineering piece, and it looked like smoking, burning oil fields, because I used engine oil and dipped it into the clean engine oil mixed with grease, and when you pulled it out, it left a kind of smoke trail. And they put that in the magazine, and I was really pleased with that. It looked really good. But it wasn't very sellable work, really, because it was quite obvious it was going to... Well, it was iffy as to how long it would last, but...
So was that like a colour image?
No, it was. And they did lovely pictures of Kate's work as well, all in colour. No, it was. Yeah. I think it was probably a double-page spread or something, maybe three. I was well chuffed with that.
Yeah. And what about your other work at the time? Because did you move into like a warehouse type studio at Carpenter's Road? Was that when you lived
it? Yeah, I did take an Acme studio. But I think that was when I'd moved out of the Acme house.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have... See, when the house got knocked down, I was then going out with Deborah Thomas, and she bought a house, or a flat, rather, just literally about 10 houses up the road. And I moved in there, and... We got Acme. I think either she had an Acme studio already, but I got an Acme studio then, and it was a great, great big thing. It was enormous, down in Carpenter's Road. But that was after the house had been knocked down. I think that's why, or it just, you know, overlapped I think that thing was when At Me Houses went, there was a chance that you might therefore have a priority on At Me's list to get studios that they were, as far as I remember, and that's what I did.
And
quite a lot of people did, actually.
What about your other work around this time? Because you were showing quite a lot, weren't you?
Well,
you've mentioned the Whitechapel Open, the Leighton Open Studios, City Racing.
Yeah, well, I mean, City Racing over the years, obviously, over that, but that was really, when I was in Leightonstone, was it 4 years? So, I mean, I was showing paintings to begin with, and then gradually, then I showed these test tube things, and then eventually I ended up making video pieces and sculptural pieces. I mean, I basically tried to get out of painting. I was trying to broaden my horizons a bit and interest myself a bit more. And through City Racing, we showed elsewhere. Most of what I did do showing wise, though, was through City Racing in the end. When I was, before that, the opportunities were very slim, really. I mean, the Whitechapel Open was a big thing in those days.
Mm.
You applied to that and hoped to get in, because there wasn't a lot else, it seemed, that was going on in London, anyway.
And you mentioned that group show at Maureen Paley's.
Yeah.
Do you know what year that was?
Well, it would have been something like 92 or... Might have been earlier. No, it could be. Must have been earlier than that. I can't remember. It might have been 90. I could look it up.
And did you did a solo show after that, didn't you, at Maureen Paley?
No, I never showed her again.
Oh, okay.
No, I only did that group show.
Mm.
No, I didn't show her again. I don't think I've ever shown a commercial gallery again, actually. I mean, after that, everything was very much kind of like me showing in other artists through knowing other artist groups, like in Manchester with Gary up there, and then in Vienna with Andy Margus, and in Bremen with another artist on gallery. A lot of stuff came out of, which was really where the Leightonstone, it's why that gallery acted so differently to if we hadn't done it and we'd just been artists in Leightonstone, I think, because it really opened up. Because you could show other people in the gallery who had galleries somewhere else, and you could do a swap. So you had some sort of... I mean, it wasn't purely there for that reason, but it was... And some of the shows you could do, like, collateral. You know what I mean? You could sort of give Addy and Marcus a show from Vienna and they'd say, well, do you want a show in our space? And so... And you would. And then it was great fun as well. It was,
So you showed in Bremen,
Vienna, yeah, Manchester, Transmission Gallery in Glasgow. I've gone blank on the name of the gallery in Manchester, which is rude of me. I've actually got, in my bag, I've got a City Racing book, actually, I could tell you. Front here. Paris, we showed in Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de la City de Paris, because of City Racing coming to the gallery and wanting to show people from, I can't see that bloody Manchester thing, Transmission, sorry, it's boring. Gruppegrün, that's Bremen. Should be in here. Maybe we didn't put it in here. I know why it isn't in here. Anyway, no, it's not in there. I don't know. I'm a bit surprised by it.
Was it anything to do with Dave Beach, the Manchester gallery?
No, it wasn't. It was Martin Vincent and others. But no, Dave Beach wasn't involved in Manchester. Are you recording? Maybe he wasn't. I don't think he was involved in Manchester in those days. He did do. I did do something with Dave Beach much later in Manchester when he ran a little gallery temporarily. But no, he wasn't there then. It was an artist group. I feel really bad. I can't remember their name. Gone blank. Forgotten it. Sorry.
Okay. Museum of London Archive. There's a picture of you and Pete.
Is it?
On a tug of war.
Oh, yes, yes.
That was the festival, which...
Was it Colville Road? Was it? Or Claremont Road? Claremont Road.
Yeah.
That's when Lucy Bagley lived then, who moved up to live with me later. I think Ian Ball and she lived in that road on that little bit before it goes around the back.
Yeah. And do you remember when that was taken? And the...
Well, it was a street party of some sort. I don't know what it was in aid of, I can't remember now. But it was before the Dongus people came, and it was our... So that was when all those houses were lived in, as far as I remember. And we... I really can't remember much about why it happened. I remember doing the tug of war vaguely, and I think people... It was like a fate, basically. It was a kind of street fate, wasn't it? I cannot remember why.
It was... The
No M11. Was it a fundraiser for the M11? Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, that would make sense. It was a fundraiser.
And Hugh Morgan Thomas.
Yeah, he was like an was he an MP or a councillor? No, he's a councillor. He turned up out of the blue one day at one of the inquiries. And, what did he do? I can't remember.
Well, he was supporting it, and Ian Bourne apparently did some T-shirts.
That's right. Well, there are the famous T-shirts of a lorry crashing through a house. I've still got to stop the M11 Link Road campaign. Very buzzy, very black and white. They were quite good, though. Quite effective. Forgotten Ian did those, yeah.
And then there was little stores down the street.
Yeah, cakes and what have you, and bring them by and all that kind of thing, as far as I remember.
So who did all the stalls
in it? Well, I think just probably... Well, I mean, when we got involved with the campaign against the road, you'd go... Paul Noble, I remember, and a small core of us went regularly to meetings, you know, about it. And I imagine it was just artists, friends. We probably just... I mean, Ian was involved in the campaign. He'd come to the meetings, and Lucy lived with him, and she was great game for kind of baking cakes and whatever, so he'd have got her in to do that. And I don't know, I just... people who lived in the road or who were friends, or it was a dead end road, wasn't it, so you could do something like that in it without it being a problem. But I really don't remember the details of it, I'm afraid. Probably I don't even remember if I probably lent rope or something. I mean, I probably did things for it, building. I think there was a sponge, you know, we throw wet sponges. I think I remember building one of those or something, you know, where you stick your head through. And I think I did that with Pete, or Pete did it, but I can't remember. It's very traditional.
Seeing that event, it did remind me of when you had that show at Carpenter's Road, and you had like that slap and tickle.
Oh yeah, when I had open studio at Carpenter's Road at Atme Place. Yeah, slap and tickle machine. Well.
And I wondered if you did anything like that for the event.
No.
The sponge, the throwing the wet sponges.
No, I've always liked, you know, that basic kind of fate, silliness kind of, you know, thing. But I wouldn't have made any connection directly, and I didn't do anything that would be, you could think of as sort of a crossover artwork in the open then. I did do a stall of machines, kick yourself, slap and tickle, in another fate that was called a twist of fate, which was in some flats in Hackney. It was in the middle, there was this block of flats, like a kind of U shape, were going to be knocked down, I think, and they were doing somebody organised a art fate in the
was
middle.
Was that Holly Street
Estate? Yeah, Holly Street, that was it. Yeah, and I did a stand there, which was like green walls, which I built, and then put machines on them, and then people could come up and use them if they wanted to, which only fools did, but I got the mayor of Hackney to do it.
Do you think that might have been subliminally influenced by that fate?
I'm quite sure that the kind of my happiness to be involved in that kind of thing would have been, you know, helped by good experiences like the thing. I mean, yes, but not... And I was trying to relax my work and not be quite so gallery orientated and stuff, but when I did the twist of fate thing, it was after I'd really, you know, the Atme studio had gone and the broker campaign was all over. So I didn't do things like, I mean, I, looking back, it would have been great to have applied more of what I now do I mean, I really wish in a way that artistically, but life isn't like this, obviously, because you grow up at different rates, to, you know, your experiences affect what you do. But I didn't have the sense at the time to be at all artistic and out there and use it, which is what, say, when the Dongas tribe people came at the very end of the road protesting thing after the inquiries had finished, they did far more what was art stroke protest, you know, and you couldn't quite, it would be up to you to whether you defined it as art or not, but it was very visual and stuff. And we just didn't really do much of that, really. I mean, it just never really, I mean, we used to I remember going to the Department of Transport with cardboard boxes and stuff, and we used to sit in those, and I think they looked a bit like houses, and we'd make lots of banners in the traditional kind of way. And Paul Noble did a blue plaque, which I thought was pretty good, but very subtle thing, really. Nothing sort of as loud as the Dongas. But I don't remember much art being done. I mean, you know, your doorway with the people photograph in the house next to you that was empty.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the most visual thing I remember, really, that anyone did. Whether I'm, but my memory's not brilliant. I may be forgetting somebody unfairly, but.
But I suppose what you have to remember is, like, that was sort of 1987.
Yes.
Not many people were actually doing site-specific work.
No, it was a very... The British art scene was very traditional, really, wasn't it? Painting or sculpture, you know, or you might be a filmmaker, but you didn't really... But I think some people like John Smith were probably doing stuff, but then you didn't see it.
That's right.
That I remember. You know, you might have been making something, but you didn't... It wasn't out there.
Mm.
Especially as you walked around the area, it wasn't out there. Whether he showed it, I don't know at the time, actually, but... No, you're right. I think it was my turn where I'd been to college, you know, Chelsea Art School. I studied painting, and it wasn't even a fine art course. It was a painting course, which is more specific. And I felt, for years, you know, battling against that kind of rather conservative, as I see it, education thing. And it just didn't prepare you, really, for that kind of event occurring in your life, to you then to have to use your visual skills, which I probably had, but I just, it was like a mental block, really. I wasn't, you know, very politically aware or minded of artists who had been. You know, I wasn't taught about artists who were political artists and actively did stuff visually out in the street. And I only found out about them much later, really. Which is, you know, obviously my fault as well as anyone else's.
And yet, you set up City Raised It.
Yeah, but again, it's quite a conventional thing to do, isn't it, though, really? It's a gallery, you know? It wasn't like it was kind of... It was following on, emulating, but lower brow, as it were, the traditional thing of having a gallery, wasn't it, really, in some ways? I mean, it has its good things, but it's not... It wasn't exactly...
But in a way, I mean, when you look back with all those, you know, artists' houses... Not many artists actually did do that. They didn't, like, set up a gallery in their
No.
And, like, now, I think that's what people would be doing.
Yes, enterprise was low in that sense. I don't think, yeah, people didn't... But I also think communication was much worse in those days. I mean, it wasn't so easy to... I mean, there wasn't any... I do think that, to a degree, the cheapness of being able to mail out by email... to invite people to something, you know, once you've got your internet connection, you don't have to pay for printing anything, really, you know, whereas then, to invite people, you literally had to print something, and you had to go out and post it, or go out and give it out, and I think it was much more time-consuming and costly, so I think people were put off by that, maybe. I mean, that's excuses, I mean, really, but...
Did you have a telephone?
Do you know, I can't remember. We did have one, and yeah, I did. Probably not straight away, though. We definitely got one later on, though. But yeah, but I it's interesting. I can't actually remember if I had one, and when I got it. I did have one probably fairly early on. I got one, yeah, because when you're living on your own in those places, it's like that was a bit of a must, really, I suppose. But I don't know if everyone did, though.
I didn't.
I think quite a lot of people had used phone boxes.
Yeah.
But I probably had slightly more money than some artists because I was working. You know, I wasn't...
Right.
Like, you know, if you were on the dole, and you... Okay, you had loads of time to make your art, but you didn't have much money to make your art with. I remember Peter Owen was always making art out of stuff he could find rather than what he bought, because he didn't work, which gave him loads of time, and I would begrudge him the time, but I had some money because I went to work. But then, so that's why I probably I could have all the telephones, what I'm saying. But.
So when you was making your work, because you talked about the piece that used oil and various substances, you would actually be able to go and buy your materials. I mean, you sound like you were quite selective about the object.
Yeah, it was by then. I was being very particular about what I got. But I got a lot of glass test tubes free from a chemical glassware company in Hackney. That was, so I did try and get stuff free. But, you write off to get free materials from places and it's a nightmare. They don't reply and you just don't make it work. And as I say, I was working, so I could afford to buy some stuff. And the other thing was, if you had a show, this is the thing I thought, if I've got a show at City Racing, which by running a gallery, I would be showing, not every show, but I'd have a show to work towards, then I would be very happy to commit my money to something, because I knew I had an outlet for it, and that was quite important to me. I would have viewers and people that I knew would come, So what I've always found it difficult to make work, and I think it is for all artists, if in a vacuum, you can take photographs, but would you get them printed up in the format you planned to have them in unless you had a show? Well, you probably wouldn't, but because you wouldn't be able to afford it, and what would be the point? You'd have to store them, and then, I don't know. I mean, painters have always been a bit different, haven't they? They always seem to just keep churning out paintings, and they just reuse stretches.
Because you was next door to Geoffrey Dennis.
Yeah.
He was showing quite
a lot. He exhibited quite a lot, yes, at that time. He was, having him as a neighbour when I first met him was actually like having a famous artist, although he wasn't that famous, but I can't remember where he was showing then, but he was showing. He definitely had it. He was exhibiting, and I think he did a bit of teaching, but he was doing quite well, really. Yeah.
And did he come in and have a look at your work?
A bit. He wasn't very communicative. We chatted over the fence more. He was quite a private person in some ways, and I think he did, probably. I think probably he was working and he needed his space, and I mean, I think that there were different kinds of artists in Leytonstone. I think there were people who were what I would now look back on as, and use the term professional, as in they were kind of not constantly having cups of coffee with other people and going around everyone's houses and chatting and sitting in the studio, and going home and in their garret and starving kind of thing. They were actually working and they kept themselves and they went out and about and stuff. And there were other people who lived who seemed to be much more into that very local and social kind of thing, which was fine. And but I think they kind of were, and they crossed over and met, but they were quite a slightly different attitude, I thought, really. I mean, eventually, I suppose turned out that by running City Racing, we were away a lot. I remember quite often leaving Leytonstone, going down to the Oval on the Tube, and it being a hell of a long way, but it was like, it was worth all that effort, but it meant we weren't around in Leytonstone anymore. Like, some people we knew, I kind of felt I was leaving. I mean, I think I probably had a slightly better than thou attitude, actually, in the end. I was thinking I probably felt, it was more important what I was doing than stay, which is very wrong, really. But I do remember thinking a bit like, oh, I've had enough of this being out in Leytonstone parochial thing. I want more.
And when you was like at the Northcote and the Heathcote,
yeah,
and other artists were there, did you sort of discuss ideas?
Well, we talked a lot. I do remember that being, I really loved all that, especially when I first got there. It was great to go down the pub. Well, I remember talking for hours and hours about, and having round the table discussions about painting and all kinds of, very much so. I mean, it wasn't like, it seemed really enjoyable and important at the time. Probably we were waffling away a lot of it, but I did. It was important.
Do you think it was quite a stimulating environment?
Yeah, very. Oh, absolutely. I loved it. Yeah, no, it was much better than being, totally on your own in the. Say you had a nice house in the country and you had a studio at the bottom of the garden and all that. I would find that really difficult. Then I would have found it really difficult because you would have no stimulus in terms of talking, and because you're working out what you want to do artistically. Well, you need to rub those ideas off people, don't you? I mean, some people need to do that all their life, but I think you have to do it when you're younger, and when you leave art school, there's a vacuum, isn't there? You've left all your students, they've all gone somewhere else, and you're not going to college every day, so where are you going to meet these people and talk to them? You've got to really organise it. It's hard, but Leytonstone kind of covered that ground a bit, really, because you you were going down the pub and it was different. It was great.
Do you mean like it was sort of like a buffer after art school?
Well, yeah, because when you leave art school, you just, lots of people, it's like they fall off the edge of a cliff. They stop making work. They have to get a job. They don't see any other artists anymore. Maybe just the odd one, but because of practical circumstances, you just see tons less artistically interested people, unless there's a really great gallery scene, which there wasn't then in London. I mean, you're talking on your hand the number of openings there were, you know, a month, let alone.
So in London at that time, what do you think were the kind of sort of interesting galleries you would look at, you know?
Well, I mean, at the time, Anthony Reynolds' gallery was showing work which was interesting, that I remember. Maureen Paley was showing quite interesting work. Obviously, you had, you know, your Doffays and your Waddingtons and people like that, who were quite interesting, some of them, Doffay particularly. But they were basically commercial galleries. There was Matt's gallery, obviously, which was a funded gallery, and there was Chisenhale, and so there were the funded, there were the few funded galleries, Showroom, Chisenhale, Matt's gallery, that I remember particularly. Riverside Studios was quite big at the time. I mean, they did show some quite good shows for a while over there, quite a long time, probably. And,
did you show at Chisenhale or Riverside?
I don't think I did. No, I used to go to the opening studios upstairs, and I used to go to every exhibition they did pretty well. No, I don't think I ever did. I mean, at the time, I think the studios upstairs got to have a show there once a year, but that kind of got dropped off for a while. And then it was run by people, and, you know, they were getting quite big artists in, weren't they? And that's my memory of it, anyway. But there weren't many galleries, really. I mean, certainly nothing compared to now, put it that way. Although I think there was some good work being shown, and there's some quite interesting things happening. I mean, but years before that, it was like Air Gallery and people like that. But they'd gone by then, I think. I'm probably forgetting some really good one, but in the East End there weren't many, were there? I mean, there was probably Maureen was about it, really, and Chisenhale and Matt's. I can't think of anything else at all.
And,
open studios really were the only thing that artists, most artists you knew, the only time you saw their work really was when they had an open studio, which was quite a big thing, wasn't it? You'd go to I remember going to quite a lot of open studio blocks, buildings over London and seeing people's work.
I think a lot of people went to open studios.
Yeah, it was a big thing in those days.
And buyers.
Yeah, and it was I don't think it's the same anymore. It's not an essential to go to open studios. I've completely stopped. I never do it. But that doesn't mean that no one else does. But I don't remember. You don't see much publicity about it anymore. Even I don't. Anyway, it's a smaller part of the art world. But it was a big thing then, I think. Just because there was less, that was the only time you could see their work. Because there weren't many galleries showing it.
Did you sell anything in any of the shows at that time?
I sold a piece to Mark Wallinger's mother from City Racing from an early show. I think it was probably the second or third group show, which was quite amusing. I knew her anyway and knew Mark for years, and she came to the opening because we would always invite his mum and dad. But no, not hardly sold anything. I've hardly ever sold anything anyway in my life, really. I don't sell much work. No, I didn't sell much. We didn't really. We didn't know how to sell anything, really. I think we were more. But the idea for us was more to get other people, gallerists, to see the work, or people who organise shows. You know, I don't think we were really thinking about sales, particularly in the early days. I mean, if it happened later on, it was usually because the artist knew somebody who would, like, you know, would bring someone down. And it was a bit of luck, really. We didn't really. I never sold anything from the house and at me. I don't think. I don't remember. I might have sold it to a friend or something. But I don't remember.
When you was living in Leytonstone, did you do any teaching at the art schools or anything?
Not when I was living in the Atme house, no. I did afterwards. I mean, I think I did a bit when I was doing. When we were running City Racing, we used to go. Especially after, about halfway through, I remember we used to go and do talks, get invited to talk, you know, art schools about it.
Where did you go?
Oh, God, Chelsea, I think I did, and I did quite a few, really, but I've forgotten where they all were now. Goldsmiths, I did one with Paul Noble, we did a joint one.
The Whitechapel, you did one, didn't you?
Well, I was on a panel at Whitechapel, wasn't I?
Yeah.
With something. It wasn't
and
a
spoke about
we talked about it then, yeah. We used to do slide talks there quite. I mean, I did it at the University of Westminster. And I'd done loads, Norwich. I mean, basically, if there was somebody you kind of knew a bit who did some teaching, they would kind of invite you to go up and do it. But it wasn't in the early days of city racing. It was, as far as I remember, it was later.
And when you always seem to have been a kind of avid sort of preview goer.
Oh, yeah, we all were, really.
And did you... Like, when did you start going to...
Well, when we ran City Racing, I think particularly when we started running City Racing, because it was when the way you would get to invite people or know who to invite was partly to do with, like, going to openings and giving out cards, because mm-hmm. that was... So... But we'd go anyway, because that's we were interested, and it was, you know, free drink, and you'd meet... There was, like, a community of people that moved around openings... And you'd see the same people at practically every opening, but that was all the openings in London. I mean, now that happens still, but they cross over and you don't see the same people because they, you know, you go to different types of galleries or different. There's so many, but in those days it was like you just would go. Anyway, it was just, you know, social as well, obviously. And I did work at Art Monthly as an art scribe, so obviously I had access to. Quite a lot of information about what was on and when it was coming up and everything like that, and I'd have invitation cards which I could get because we'd always get sent too many at work, so you could nick one of those and go to a show, or you know, I'd get taken by the editors because they were very friendly in that way, you know. And so I that's why I do that. It's partly because working in the art magazine world, it's just kind of.
So do you think that you might have been like a little satellite, like knowing where all the shows.
Well, I think my being working at an art magazine, we did use. I mean, I was able to get, say, addresses and names of people at galleries more easily, especially in the early days when that was quite useful. And writers, I could even get to, you know, which was quite. That was quite useful. So it was almost cheating in a way, because I could actually post something to a writer, which no one else could do because they wouldn't have their address.
Like when you started your City Racing mailing list.
Yeah, we were able to put some writers on it. Well, not many, I don't mean like loads, but you know, or I'd know them because they'd come in the magazine. But I wouldn't be like constantly badgering them or anything like that. But we could mail them a card, yeah. Yeah, that was handy. I mean, these days mailing lists, email lists are a bit more easy to get hold of people's addresses, but in those days obviously it was a bit harder.
I mean, in a sense, you had really good marketing.
For what? Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was better than it would have been otherwise. And the other thing was there were five of us, so it wasn't just me, because I was doing that. But then they were all working, meeting other artists and getting, you know, information off them, so we could pool it. I mean, that was the thing about the gallery, was the other thing was, you know, you weren't on your own in your studio in Leytonstone doing all this on your own. You were communally running a space, and therefore a lot of the energies... You know, the effort is shared, isn't it? And there's more information. As is other problems, obviously, but...
And yeah, I mean, you're doing that, but you're not a sort of... I mean, I'm just thinking about people, the difference, maybe, in people's attitudes now to running their own gallery.
Yeah.
You're not strike me as a career-minded person.
No, I'm not really.
Or sort of sell yourself type... attitude, which is so prevalent now.
Yeah, pushiness or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I suppose we were a bit pushy really then, though. But it was just to get an audience and for people to see work. There wasn't the money thing. Maybe that's unfair on people now, but I wasn't really so bothered about selling. Maybe some of us were more, but I was just more interested in getting people to come and see work. You know, because what's the point of making work in a vacuum? I always think, you know, you want a reaction, or you want to affect people or do something in that way. So that was why. But yeah, no, I'm not a pushy person particularly. But on the other hand, when you're a group, you can do it when it's less. you know, if you do it all yourself, it's very pushy, isn't it? If you do all that all on your own, you are being quite pushy. But if you just, you do a bit and they do a bit, and it sort of doesn't feel like it, really.
And also, I suppose it's like you feel like you're doing it for a common aim.
Well, yeah, everyone benefits. Yes. Yeah, and next show, you've got the same mailing list, and it's bigger and it's better for the next people. And then when you invite new artists in, you've done it for them as well, because they benefit from the mailing. I mean, in the end, we had, what, probably doesn't sound that much now, but it was like 900 names or something, which was a lot for a little gallery then. It was quite expensive to mail it out. One of our biggest expenses in the end was posting out the cards, getting them printed. Yeah.
And then was Matthew Hicks involved in that?
Not at all. No, he did a show. But he no, he wasn't involved in the gallery at all. He just did one show. I mean, he was a friend of people, but and he used to come a lot and visit and everything. But then lots of people did. I mean, but no. He very kindly invited us to do a show at the ICA when he was asked to, when he was doing a curating stint there on the history of the gallery, which I think some people have confused with, because, you know, you don't know too much from an outside point of view. It appears as if he and City Racing are somehow
connected.
Intrinsically connected, but they're not.
Yeah. But he obviously,
but he was supportive though, absolutely. Yeah, and he did we did give him a show to do, and he approached us with an idea for a show, and it was good, and you know, it was an imprint show, and he was doing these publications, and it seemed the right thing for us. It was a good project, and he wanted to exhibit a show of about the project, and it was great to do, it was good.
So many questions here, and I'm thinking,
what's the time we'll be doing?
We've got 10 minutes, but I feel we can easily do another hour and a half, you know.
Well, I don't mind doing it again if you want to.
So many things I haven't touched on. I was interested in what you said, like, about Geoffrey Dennis next door, and the different kind of types of artists, and I mean, Rachel Garfield said that there was an open house policy. I mean, that was the first I'd heard of it.
You mean people didn't lock their doors, you mean, and you could just wander in? Is that what you mean?
Something like that.
Well, I think probably within some friends that was the case, I think. Well, I think, yeah, it was very relaxed that way. I mean, I'm sure people did do that. But not everybody, by a long shot. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sure, you know, groups of people who knew each other did. I don't think my door was wide open ever. I don't think yours was. I don't think Sharon Day's was. I think some people's it was. I can't even remember where Rachel lived now. Did she live? I've completely forgotten where she lived. I haven't mentioned her, have I?
I think it was Claremont Road, actually.
I mean, I've completely forgotten she lived there. I mean, I knew her through going to studios down in Space. She had a Space studio down in Dace Road, where I had one down there as well.
She's
been around for years, but I knew her more through studio openings things rather than where she lived.
Because she was the caretaker at Space Studio as well.
Was she really?
Yeah.
So did she live in Leytonstone?
In Claremont.
When? Road. How long for?
Oh, years.
It's terrible, you know. I can't. She wasn't someone I saw in the pub much then, or something. That was the interesting thing about it. There were some people who you didn't. There were, like, crossover, even within that small area, there were probably people who didn't cross much, and some people who did, but I don't remember seeing her much up there. She might kick me when she sees me. I'm quite good friends with her now, actually. She lives in Wolverhampton. I see her quite often, and it's quite funny, really. But I don't remember seeing her there at all. Must have done. My memory is terrible, isn't it?
So, with, Geoffrey Dennis.
Yeah.
You sort of almost describe him as someone quite professional.
Well, he had a commercial. I think he was showing with a, I've forgotten what gallery it was, though. It's what's bugging me. He was with a commercial gallery. And in those days, that was what you were aiming to try to be. But there weren't many of them. So if someone had one and had a show a year or a couple of shows or whatever, they were professional in the sense that they were selling work and showing. And he was, you know, he was in quite often in some group shows here and there, so you know, museum type things as well, I think. And so you thought, well, that's quite professional. I mean, you know, but he wasn't my kind of work desperately, but it was quite interesting. But I also knew a lot of other kind of professional artists by then as well, really. Teachers I'd known who, because at Goldsmiths, the Gerard Hemsworth and Nick DeVille and various lot of visiting tutors were artists who were exhibiting, and so it, that had come into my. Whereas when we were at Chelsea, something like that, I don't remember. They were, but they were kind of so different and so uncommunicative about how they were that you didn't know anything about it. Where by the time I was in Acme land, as it were, I was more aware of the professional, and working at the magazines, of course, you know, you kind of got to know how artists did actually get to be in shows and do things. But